Hey everybody, good day. Welcome to another exciting episode of the OIG Roundtable. I am Eric Rubenstein, Senior Director of Litigation, Fraud, Waste, and Abuse Support here, and I am joined by my two partners in crime, Wade McFall, retired Assistant Special Agent in Charge from the LA Field Office, and now a manager on our SIU team, and Matt Kachansky, retired executive from HHS OIG, and the retired Northeast UPIC director, and now our payment integrity director, overseeing all of our payment integrity operations here. So today we want to talk about, we want to go and revisit the topic of return on investment, ROI. Everybody likes to talk about ROI from the recoveries perspective, the savings perspective, but there's a piece of ROI that's really an intangible and a difficult to assess, and that's ROI relative to training. We often find that our clients want training, and our clients want to elevate their SIUs, but oftentimes we find that part of the conversation internally within the payer is whether or not it's worth the time. Is the juice worth the squeeze, so to speak? And so a piece of this is, how do we measure ROI? Because it really isn't financially driven when we're talking about return on investment from a training perspective. You know, there's the big piece is the subjectivity of ROI and the objectivity of ROI, and whether or not you're getting that return on investment from your staff as it relates to that. So Wade, I want to start with you because we were just talking a lot about this. You know, and you, Matt, and I all spent a bulk of our time at OI responsible for training. You were a firearms instructor. Matt coordinated a lot of training from the headquarters level and was part of a lot of the outreach that was done from the headquarters perspective, as they call it. Particularly, Matt, when you took over doing the child support enforcement, going out and doing a lot of that training. I remember that training very well, actually, because I remember being in rooms with hundreds of people from local, regional, state, and federal organizations. You know, I was a defensive tactics instructor. I was also the sort of the emergency medical instructor. And then here, you know, we do a ton of training for our SIU clients. And there is this issue about subjective responses and objective responses. And the first part is being able to assess in a post-training environment about whether or not you felt that that training was relevant, right? And the biggest thing that I want to talk about from that subjective versus objective is this whole premise of, is your audience the right audience? When you're doing training, you may be giving it to everybody in an SIU, but is that training really relevant to the people that are there? Which then lends itself to whether or not that that response is going to be objective or subjective, as the case may be.
Wade.
Was that there, a question Wade? To me? I'm sorry.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry about there. I'm sorry. It was about, like, you know, discussing about that subjectivity versus objectivity, but also really the relative point of subjectivity versus objectivity is ultimately founded in, is your audience the right audience? And can they really be objective? Because is the training relevant to the people that you're speaking with?
Right. And that's one of the things that we kind of look at after training. We typically will have a response as to, you know, give them like five questions on answer one to five or whatever as to was this relevant or was it helpful. And it goes into things like was the speaker effective, was the material effective to your job, was it understandable, those types of things. And you can get, you know, you're kind of limited as to the feedback you can get on a minimally number of questions, you know, 5 to 8 questions, and the response is just 1 to 5, something to that effect. So it's really more important. And if it's a big group, you can't, you know, you can't interview and sit down and talk to every member to kind of go deeper as to how effective the training was. But outside of those questions, the 1 to 5 questions, I think it's important to sit down and talk to people about, you know, maybe do a sample of people and do that one-on-one questioning, because a lot of the training that we would give now in kind of a classroom setting is different from the training that I used to do, and like probably you, Eric, where you're training the same number, the same agents over and over quarterly, where you can actually observe more so, like, if the training was relevant and effective, if there was a certain issue you were seeing in a firearm situation last quarter and you addressed certain things, whether it's malfunctions or just basic firearms efficiency, you're seeing the same students, for lack of a better word, quarter after quarter, and you can kind of gauge, you can see what's working and what's not. Whereas a classroom setting for people that you don't normally work with and you probably won't see them again, it's very difficult to determine if it was relevant, if it was effective, if they got anything out of it, if it's going to help them in their day-to-day job.
So you bring up a good point. You know, for me, the key word there that you talked about was relevance of the topic. You know, when we're doing some of our training and education here at Advise for some of our SIU plans and clients that we have, one of the things that we do is we have a kind of a kickoff meeting to discuss what are the pain points that leadership sees, but then also what are the pain points that the working investigators see, because those may not be aligned. And, you know, we kind of talk about addressing that. So, you know, part of the metric for me is understanding what are those pain points that management sees and why are there oftentimes disconnects between what management sees as relevant training versus what the investigators see. Because it's sometimes important to understand why does management feel that this is a relevant topic, but the SIU investigators may have a different take on what is going to be that piece of relevance. But Matt, I want to go to you because this then gets to this whole premise of, is training always for everyone? You may have really relevant topics, but those relevant topics may only be for a subset of people. And we have this happening specifically with one of our clients where we have spent some time with the leadership and the managers and the supervisors and provided them with very different training than we did the line investigators. So training may have a relevance to it, but the audience may be wrong.
Correct. Yeah. And that's why going to your point, it's so important to meet with the target audience beforehand to find out what are their training needs? What are the things that they want to learn more about? What are the things that are causing them issues in their work? What are their roadblocks? And those differ from position to position, from level to level, even sometimes from person to person. And while you can't tailor a training regimen to one person, you can try to make it tailored to a particular group. So if we're talking to investigators who are new versus investigators that are experienced, our training is going to be different. It's going to be touching on things that are relevant to them so that they find it worthwhile, A, which is part of some of subjective ROI, as well as something they can use in their everyday work that's going to make them more efficient and more effective. And then having an impact on the objective ROI, the actual return on investment, the proceeds of the job. Going back to that Operation Restore or Operation Save Our Children, the child support one, you know, we were going state to state, bringing in and meeting with the individual parties involved: federal prosecutors, state child support agencies, the investigators, the data analysts, all of these people, and we were bringing them together in one room and then tailoring the training to them. What did they need to know? New laws have been passed. Let's go through those laws, go through the evidence needed, the elements of those laws. What is the investigative process? What is the administrative process that the state wants you to follow? What are the court orders? What are the paperwork? What's the document flow? All of that stuff, state by state, each training was different because each state was different. But we had to tailor it to the audience and then bring in, to Wade's point, the right people that are going to benefit from that training.
Yeah, I mean, if you're sitting in a room of people and you're talking to a bunch of data analysts about something that's not involving data analytics, you've got a bunch of people who, in about 15 minutes, they're all standing up in the back of the room eating hard candy and pieces of chocolate to stay awake, right? Because they haven't... because they haven't embraced the training. You know, I think, and when we talk about ROI in training, because it isn't necessarily a financial measurement, it's really more about operational efficiency, that the training, if it's good training and you've been able to measure operational efficiency, you know, the great example is if you have an investigator who was only able to handle 10 cases, but from training and education and confidence building, which is really a very important piece of the puzzle. You've given someone the confidence to handle more work. You've essentially created an ROI. Maybe you don't have to hire additional people. Maybe you have people because of that greater amount of efficiency, they're able to do more work in a more timely manner. And so ROI is an intangible because it's not financially driven here. Your ROI is, are you opening cases faster? Are you closing cases faster? Are you able to then show, hey, these are creating initiatives. These are helping to create priorities, particularly if you do training in which you're not going to, the training is not going to result in some initiative or priority. For example, if you have people come in and do a training session on podiatry fraud, but then none of your investigators are working podiatry fraud, you've essentially wasted everybody's time, right? Should it lead to an initiative? Should it lead to a reprioritization? And so that last piece, Matt, is implementing what's been taught.
Right, exactly. There are three, you can break down program integrity into three basic steps: identification, investigation, and resolution of cases. Training impacts all of those things. In identification, you become more efficient in identifying those cases that are of higher priority, higher return on investment, higher program vulnerability to the plan. You identify those things, and you'd be trained on how to identify those things in the data. Investigations, you talked about investigative efficiencies. Talk about, you know, we bring in, you know, the training talks about how to do better interviews, how to review a lead, how to research those leads to get to the bottom of the policies to be able to effectively and efficiently triage those cases and investigate them. And then resolution is bringing them to a sound, defensible administrative action. And that's partly in the training of how to document the cases, how to actually process those cases to make sure that you're filing a consistent basis that's defensible at the end, and therefore more ROI, because there's less appeals, less overturns of denied claims and things like that. And then the bottom line, the implementation, is the most important thing. If we train and they don't do it, the training has no impact then. The ROI is negative because you've used a lot of time training, and then it just goes to naught. One of the things that should be done is to measure that ROI is you do quality assurance checks afterward. Are they following the training? If we did training on documentation, you check the case files 3 months, 6 months down the line. Are those case files, is the documentation improving? Are we seeing better identification of cases up front? Is the loss amounts going up in the cases that are being identified? Those are the types of quantitative quality assurance checks that can be done to see if training is being implemented.
Yeah, and that's, yeah, I mean, you're hitting, those are the important pieces. So wait, I want to go to you for kind of the final word on this, which is, I guess the best way to describe it is staff morale. Training can actually be a morale booster for people because it can help to reinvigorate them and things of that sort. But obviously, training for the sake of training does not create morale. And we know this because at OIG, we would have a lot of mandatory training that we had to slog through, whether you liked it or not. But there are opportunities where people would be able to go to conferences or training and things of that sort. So what are some of the things that you see, like, you know, for example, as a manager and, you know, putting back your OIG hat, you don't just want to spend money on training that doesn't result in something, because the goal is to have training that results in something positive, which creates that intangible ROI. Morale is an intangible ROI. When people are happy about where they are, when they're enjoying the work they're doing, those are positives and people become motivated. What are some of the things from a training perspective that you are looking at to get people involved in to create that positivity? And how do you even assess what's going to make people happy?
Well, I think there's two things that I would look at. One is making the training relevant to their job. It's like you say, so they're not sitting through something that's, you know, data related if they don't deal with data, or just so it's relevant and it's going to help them in the long run. But I think the other thing that I think is often overlooked is a lot of these conferences, You're sitting in a conference room from, 8 till 4. And then a lot of the learning comes after 4 o'clock because you meet with other colleagues, outside of your office that you only get to see maybe once a year, twice a year. And a lot of the times throughout the night, there's happy hours, there's dinners, and the conversation continues on work-related stuff. It's not just like, oh, we're off and we're talking about vacation. So I think a lot of, and often at those conferences, you get a certain number of people who don't get that element of it. They don't get that. And at 4 o'clock, they go off on their own and they have their own dinner, or they go watch TV and in the hotel room. And I think that's really a big miss, because I think probably as much is gained after 4 o'clock in some situations as is during the 8 hours of lecture that you listen to. So I think that's something that I think not only is motivating for agents or investigators to see people that they don't get the chance to see that often, but I really do feel like the conversation goes back to what was talked about during the day, the different classes. You're talking about which session did you attend and comparing and contrasting. So I think that's one area of training that, if it's an in-person training, is really valuable. And I mean, you can't deny that now a lot of the training can be done post-COVID through Teams, or the actual presentation of information, I think, is looked at differently now than it was pre-2020, because we've all gotten used to Teams and FaceTime, right, or whatever. But I think there is an element of that being in person where you get to talk with your colleagues, see colleagues you haven't seen for a while, and really hash over the training and the different elements. It may not be strictly training related, but it's almost always all work related, the discussions after hours. So, it's a hard sell a lot of times to send people to training, because it's much more expensive than doing it online. But there's really an element that I think gets overlooked and shouldn't, that that time of being together and discussing things, whether it be during breaks or after hours or whatever, is really a valuable portion of the training.
Yeah, that's a great takeaway. We went up for a one-day training recently for one of our clients. It was just an 8-hour day. It was a very small SIU of about 7 people. And they brought lunch in, so we got to stay in the room and get to know each other. And most of the investigators were working remotely. They just don't go to the office other than for meetings and training. So it really gave them an opportunity. And we went out for a happy hour and dinner afterwards. And there were a few people who were planning on going home at the end of the day. And we convinced them to come out for a little bit. And at the end, they said exactly the same thing. They said, we got to speak to, our coworkers a lot more. We talked more about cases. We talked a little bit about the training. And that collaboration of that after hours or that lunch break, it really did give people an opportunity to feel a little bit more motivated. The interesting thing about this plan is that they have a new SIU director who's only been there for a year and hadn't really interacted very much with the staff, because they're kind of all, kind of remote. And this gave them an opportunity to be with their new SIU director in person with us as the vendor and then themselves. And it does create a, I guess maybe it sounds a little cheesy, but an esprit de corps, right? It does boost the morale when you're amongst people, like-minded people doing, the same thing. So the training environment helps to definitely foster that. So look, I think the overall takeaway is that when training comes up, is everybody thinks in terms of dollars, and I get it, right? It's all about recovering money, and plans are all about recovering that money from that payment integrity perspective. But you always have to think about the non-financial piece, which is the intangible value that comes from having a well-trained group of people who are motivated to do the work that they've been hired to do, right? Just, someone showing up to the office for 8 hours with their feet on the desk surfing the internet doesn't mean that they're productive. It just means that they showed up to work for 8 hours, right? And there's something to be said about that. People need to be self-motivated to be able to get the job done. And training can oftentimes help to foster that. Oftentimes, plans have and states have requirements for SIUs to have a minimum number of hours of training. You want to make sure that training is valuable and relevant particularly when you're given the opportunity to have hours of training outside of mandated training, right? The HIPAA, the privacy, the security, and all of that, you want to make sure it's all relevant and it's timely and based upon actual experiences that lend themselves to future success. So ongoing conversation. We have these conversations more often than I ever thought we'd have them with some of our SIU clients. It amazes me how many of our SIU clients and how many plans reach out to us and are interested in training, but they have to sell it up their leadership. And it's always about what's the ROI going to be for that training. I think it's an ongoing discussion. So we'll keep it up, and we're happy to talk to all of our clients, our potential clients, prospective clients about our views on this, and come up with training that works for you. You know, we do these customized trainings for our SIU clients. Nothing is cookie cutter. We don't think that works, and we've been pretty successful with it. So, as always, it's great hearing your perspective on things. I enjoy the time we get to spend together. So, and for those that participate in our trainings and those who get our newsletter, we appreciate your input. We appreciate you following us on LinkedIn. As always, you can get our newsletter. Just go to our website, advisehealth.com. Sign up for our newsletter right there on the splash page. Follow us on LinkedIn. We've got some really good LinkedIn lives coming up over the next month. We just had a great one on lab fraud schemes with Lyra Champagne and Mandy Berg. Did a great job. We've got some really good ones coming up over the next few months, and looking forward to seeing those. And again, as always, we're looking forward to interacting with all of you. So again, thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next OIG Roundtable.
Thank you.
Thank you all.